In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is iSpy Radio Show. I'm very glad you're joining me today. Today's show is a split one, but it's also going to deal with some rather complex issues. We're going to start off by looking at an issue that continues to resurface, net neutrality. It's a look at how the left uses government to control things that don't need to be controlled. It forces providers to offer the same thing to everyone. Well, just imagine if everyone was forced to drive the same government-determined best car, a 1967 VW Beetle. What if you want or need to go faster? Or imagine if everyone was forced to buy a Ferrari. Do you really want 17-year-olds in a Ferrari or nearsighted seniors? But net neutrality is being sold as the savior of the internet. And they do this by using clever Orwellian doublespeak in marketing. They label it the opposite of what it really is. On the surface, it sounds good, but what it boils down to is death by a thousand regulations, which will always favor large companies over smaller ones. A big business can hire teams of lawyers. A mom-and-pop small company, well, good luck. We're going to get a handle on all of that with Chad Wilkinson of Free Our Internet. And then we'll talk with our friend Kamal Saleem, a former cultural jihadist. I don't know about you, but as I watched the coverage by the mainstream media of President Trump's trip to Saudi Arabia, I kept thinking there's something here that's being missed. Sure, they did their typical insults and they tried to put Trump down at every chance they could, but I just had the sense that something else was going on here on a deeper level than what's being reported. It turns out there were some amazing aspects of Trump's trip that everybody else ignored simply because the mainstream media didn't bother to find the right person to ask what was really happening. Well, we did. So stay tuned for that. I'd like to welcome Chad Wilkinson, the communications director for Free Our Internet, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to educate citizens about the secret war the tech left has been waging on citizens of the internet for almost 20 years and giving people the tools and resources to finally fight back. Chad, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. You know, considering how critical the issue of net neutrality is, I mean, the internet is just everywhere today, of course. But even so, it doesn't seem to get enough play in the media. For those who don't follow this or even know what it's all about, what is net neutrality?
Net neutrality is an effort that was started by the Obama administration to treat the internet like a utility, like the gas company, the water company, what have you. And the idea was, which wasn't, you know, on the face of it, isn't a bad idea, but the idea was that everybody should be able to have, it should be a fair playing field for content providers to the internet. So if it was created to try to keep the internet service providers, the guys that you get your internet from being able to pick winners or losers as far as how much bandwidth they use. With the internet, you only have a certain amount of bandwidth, meaning you know, there's only so much room you can pack into the internet before it starts slowing down speed. Certain companies take up more speed than others. When you stream a movie, for example, that takes up more bandwidth than you were to read a WordPress blog. So the government said, well, we don't want these bandwidth hogs to, you know, be able to, you know, we don't want these data hogs to be able to push out these smaller users. And they thought by doing so, the ISPs would pick winners and losers and or charge more money if someone is using more bandwidth or whatnot. The problem is, and it sounds great on the face of it, the problem is getting the government involved like this does a couple things. Number one, it prevents the ISPs from competing with one another for customers. For example, AT&T or Verizon have a service where you can watch movies for free on their service. You can stream movies for free. And the idea was that, well, if AT&T is offering this free service, it's going to make it less lucrative to the Netflixes of the world. reality is competition is good. And the ISPs had no problem. Again, the AT&Ts, we're talking Verizon, we're talking about Time Warner, your cell phone provider to your in-home internet provider. Competition has been good in that these ISP providers keep, competing for speed. Who's offering more speed? Price? Who's cheaper? Services available. And net neutrality basically wanted the government to come in and say every ISP provider has to act in the same way. Obviously, at that point, driving down competition and taking away choice from ultimately from consumers. Hopefully that makes sense. It's a very complicated issue, but in the end, they wanted to regulate. The government wants to be able to regulate the internet just like a power company.
Well, I actually had read a LifeSet article that called this Obamacare for the internet. Is that a pretty fair comparison?
Yeah, I would. I would say it's a very fair comparison. The problem is that the internet wasn't made great by the government. It was made
great
by private individuals that invested in it and created amazing products and amazing websites. And I mean, could you imagine trying to start something like Airbnb with government regulation thrown in? The problem is the hotels would get the lobbyists that they've got on the payroll in Congress to go after congressmen in their district saying, you know, we can't have this Airbnb because it's cutting out the hotels. The Wild West of the internet has been something that has made the internet great. And the government coming in to try to regulate it really isn't going to do the consumer any good at all. And also, it takes away from innovation as well. When was the last time, you heard from your electric company some amazing new innovation that they brought to the table? They'll do the minimum what they have to do under government regulation, and they will price where they have to price within government regulation. But you're not going to see any innovation coming out of it. And I really think net neutrality, more than anything else, it ends up creating a situation where you're going to have less investment in the internet if new players feel they have to, they've got burdensome regulations that are to prevent them from realizing their dream.
That's right. Well, I've got a rather large question here I want to talk to you about, so we'll save that for the next segment. Let's go ahead and take a break here, because it's not just about the providing of internet services, but it's also about controlling the messages. As you guys say on your website, control the medium and you control the message. So we'll talk about that after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Every week, keeping an eye on big government. This week, we're talking about something that just won't go away, the so-called net neutrality. And like so many issues from the left, it's not just what the label says it is. It's really about internet censorship or government-controlled, not-so-free speech. We're joined today by Chad Wilkinson, the Communications Director for Free Our Internet. Their website is simply freeourinternet.org, if you'd like to go visit them. Great resource for this, and lots of news articles and blogs and whatnot as well. And so Chad, in the last segment, we covered kind of what essentially net neutrality is. It would be essentially the government control and regulation of the internet instead of what it is now, which is a little bit more of a Wild West. And they were really looking at imposing some FCC regulations from back in the 30s onto the internet, the same kind of regulations that would have controlled your hard phone lines and whatnot. And, not looking at the fact that the internet is very different beast for sure. In terms of net neutrality itself, the big thing here is of course, it's not just the internet, but it's controlling that medium, which means that you get to control the different sites that people are trying to access. And the left claims they are for free speech, but for some reason, the left always wants the power of the government and the law to shut down opposing viewpoints. If their own viewpoints are so superior, why do they need the law to shut other people down?
Yeah, that's a great point. A couple weeks ago at the FCC in Washington, D.C., they were voting on the rules change, that they were going to go in and relook at the net neutrality rules. And there were protesters, and I found this so funny.
Yes.
They protest the fact that you know, net neutrality is going to limit voices, you know, on the internet, and they're saying ban Drudge, ban Breitbart, you know, and we saw this during the Fairness Doctrine as well, which was, you know, on AM talk radio. There was a movement to say, you know what, that conservative talk radio station, you know, you're licensed by the FCC, you need to have liberal voices on there as well, which would have killed talk radio, and I'm glad it didn't get through. Yeah, the hypocrisy is astounding that they're for this movement, which at the end of the day would really protect the Amazons of the world. It would protect Facebook. It would protect Twitter. And these groups have taken this, which I find absolutely astounding, you know, through this great country of innovation and not being regulated, Facebook was allowed to become gigantic. Amazon allowed to become gigantic. Twitter allowed to become gigantic. But now that they're in a position that they are gigantic, all they want to do is control
yes.
the internet. And the reason they want to do it is this. They don't want competition
That is certainly the characteristic of all monopolies, is once they get it, they will do everything they can to protect it.
Exactly. And so that's why you've seen, you know, billions of dollars heading into Washington by, George Soros and Zuckerberg and Bezos trying to prevent, have net neutrality rules in place. Because they know if innovation isn't there, less likely competition is going to pop up around the corner and be competition for them. Mm-hmm. So they end up trying to appease to liberals, so they know they're going to jump on this. And we saw it with Facebook monitoring conservative speech. They went after Trump. Twitter banning Milo Yiannopoulos. It's funny how they're selective of who they end up going after, and it's been conservatives. And so I think they feel that from a progressive standpoint and from a money standpoint, they have the money to get government regulations put in place, which will protect their brands and their companies forever. Yeah. And that's why we can't allow this to happen, because competition disappears. And again, when you have this country is going backwards, where, at Berkeley, the free speech capital of the world, of America, at least, you know, they're censoring free speech, or they're having selective speech. That's why you need to be very careful about this, because Facebook might be the platform now where everyone is on, but there might be a platform in the future that, you know, maybe leans a little bit more right, and it's just as powerful, and that could end up being competition. Nothing lasts forever.
No.
And I think Facebook, Twitter, and Amazon are trying to do that. And they're using the power of the check for lobbyists in D.C. To go after Democratic and Republican members of Congress to try to keep net neutrality. But thank God, you know, it looks like it's going to be going away the dodo bird.
Yes. In fact, I'd like to have you address that a little bit. I think one of the things that really confuses people is that term net neutrality, because it sounds so benign. It sounds like, well, we really are protecting free speech. We want to make sure everybody has access and so on and so forth. But it really is this move by the left to be able to essentially filter out the voices that they don't like. And I think Berkeley is actually a great example of that, because, I mean, that is really the argument of net neutrality in a nutshell, is that if you look at what is happening in Berkeley, that's what the left wants to do to the internet itself, is to control who has access to which organizations and so on. In terms of where net neutrality is now, it was passed in 2015, but now with the Trump administration, it is looking like they have already started to dismantle and roll back some of those rules. Why don't you give us a little bit of an update where things stand right now?
Yeah, the rules are being rolled back, and we have until, I believe, November before it'll come to a vote and they can officially remove it. But, for the next 6 months, you're going to see an all-out push by the left to try to keep net neutrality in place. And you're right, there is no neutrality in net neutrality. That's the big joke of this whole thing.
Yeah.
The only people it protects are the ones that are already in the game, and it penalizes people that want to get into the game in the future. And I'm talking about internet programmers. I'm talking about entrepreneurs. I'm talking about even the telecoms, because what it ends up doing is it puts on a burden onto the telecoms for future innovation. If the telecoms end up having to jump through rules that were set up in 1934 that were in place for copper wires going into someone's house, and the FCC is, you know, the FCC should only be in charge of monitoring airwaves, bandwidth over the airwaves, so, you know, one of your radio stations doesn't interfere with another one of the radio stations in the same dial frequency. But that's not what they want, and they're using it as a tool. If, you know, thank goodness, you can say what you want about Donald Trump, how great of a president or how terrible he is, but the one thing I'll say about him is this, that he recognizes that net neutrality is bad. It's bad for America, it's bad for Americans, it's bad for free speech, and it's bad for future investment in America.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we want to create jobs. We were the forefront of creating jobs in this space. And now, you know, we're going to let others beat us because we want to bring in more, or the government wants to bring in more, the leftists want to bring in more regulation over something that doesn't need to be regulated.
That's right. You can't regulate free speech, otherwise it's not free. So coming back, more on the fight to defend your free speech with Chad Wilkinson from Free Our Internet. Would it surprise you that a terrorist organization also wants net neutrality? More on that when we come back. And welcome back. We're talking today to Chad Wilkinson, the communications director for Free Our Internet, a nonprofit organization. Their mission is to educate citizens about the secret war the tech left has been waging on the citizens of the internet for almost 20 years. And so I teased this on the way out that an actual terrorist organization is all for net neutrality, Al-Qaeda. And on your webpage, there's a Daily Caller article there called Net Neutrality Activists Tied to Violent Groups and Convicted Al-Qaeda Terrorists. So why would an organization like Al-Qaeda benefit from net neutrality?
They want to limit free speech. Guess who else loves net neutrality? It's not called net neutrality, but China loves net neutrality. Iran loves net neutrality. Those governments decide what gets on the internet and who has access to the internet and the content that you can see on the internet. Why do they do that? Because obviously, you know, a communist government that wants to be able to, well, not in the case of Iran, but a government, a dictatorship that wants to control information that people see. Hmm. Net neutrality does the same thing. At the end of the day, you could have the government pick or choose. I don't know. You know what? We're about to go to war with
North Korea,
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Exactly. North Korea. And you know what? We're going to limit certain access to certain web pages because we don't feel Americans are ready to see it. Hmm. Net neutrality gives that type of power to the government. And one more thing about net neutrality, there already is net neutrality. Net neutrality is the ISPs are competing. In no way do they want to be seen as not having something somebody else has. It's about throttling internet speeds. Well, you know, that was one of their that was one of the left's complaints. Well, you're going to make my internet slow on websites I like to see. Well, that's not the case. Every ISP at this point is trying to get as fast as they can go, and it does them no good to throttle anybody. Mm. So, you know, these practices are in place that, in the end, it looks like it's supposed to be to create a level playing field, but that's exactly what it doesn't do. What it ends up doing is creating government control over an entity that the government has no business being in control of. And that's a very scary thing that this country's looking at right now.
You know, we've been talking to how Facebook and Google and Twitter, they're all for this net neutrality. And in part, because it squelches their competition. So for those people that are on the right, isn't the answer to build competing social networks and competing content providers? Because right now, social media, it's either Facebook or Twitter, and both of those are controlled by the left. And of course, all of the major broadcast networks are all controlled by the left. So isn't that really where the right ought to be focusing at least some of their efforts, is to start putting up better content?
I think so. And I think you do see it in some places. I do some work with Breitbart as well. Actually, act as their company spokesperson. And Breitbart, which you'll find on their website today, saw a massive drop in their rankings on May 2nd. And there was a story in Vanity Fair about it saying, look, you know, conservatives don't care about Breitbart anymore. They went from like 40th place or 50th place down to like 300th place in the country in the major rankings. Well, it turns out that Breitbart somehow, we don't know how it happened, but in order to be ranked, you're certified by various companies. One of them is Alexa, which is an Amazon company. Again, a Jeff Bezos company. And wow. Somehow they turned off the little switch that ranks us. So we went from, I think, like 54th to 300th place. And when we brought this to the attention of the company, the rankings come said, oh, we're so sorry. We don't know how that happened. And, you know, what ended up happening was they turned the switch back on. Literally one day later, we're back up into 54th place. There is a war against right-wing media on the internet, and you see it with the boycotts. You see it with the Sleeping Giant campaign, which is trying to take advertisers away from conservative outlets.
Yes,
you know, and I think there is really good. I think there's really good content out there, but you know, we are playing in an arena where, for the most part, the biggies are left-leaning organizations that want to keep their place and will do anything government-wise to make that happen. You know, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, net neutrality would have continued and regulations would have become tougher, and chances are you could have seen your prices go higher for your ISP service, and the services themselves would start declining. But thank goodness that we have a Republican chairman of the FCC that sees this as being nothing but nonsense.
Well, it is scary to think what would have happened had Hillary gotten in there, for sure. Just real quick, in terms of keeping the internet safe, because that I think is what a lot of people really, whether you're right or left, you do want to make sure that everybody has access to the internet.
Yep.
So what happens if Trump gets voted out, either the next election cycle or whatnot, and we get another leftist in office? Is there anything we can be doing now to establish some boundaries to protect that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't mean to plug my website, but that's what we do. You know, I encourage your listeners to go to freeourinternet.org and sign up. You get our newsletter and you can check out our blogs. But, you know, people need to recognize, especially conservatives, that chances are, you know, obviously Congress is going to end up switching up at some point. We are not going to have, the Republicans are not going to have the entire, they're not going to have the executive and have all branches of government. So what we need to do is proactive. We need to become activists.
Yes.
And we need to get out there and we need to call our congressmen and we need to call our senators and tell them, you know, we're not going to accept net neutrality. We know what it did. We know what it does. You know, it's a wolf in sheep's clothing, and we're not going to allow our free speech to be to trample upon.
Be squashed. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. No way.
That's right. Thank you, Chad. I want to thank you so much for your time today, and good luck as you guys go forward.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Coming up, Kamal Saleem on those hidden cultural nuances during Trump's Saudi Arabia trip. That show was far more successful than the mainstream media wants you to know. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We're definitely going to change gears here as we're going to shift away from net neutrality, which is a very big topic. We'll definitely have to have Chad Wilkinson back on. But we're going to go way back in time, all the way back to last week when Donald Trump finished up his first foreign visit. This is something very much like net neutrality that also didn't get a lot of play, probably and perhaps because it was so successful. And I'd like to welcome to the show Kamal Saleem. He is a former culture jihadist. He is now the president of Koom Ministries. That's K-O-O-M-E Ministries.com. If you'd like to go visit them on the web. Kamal, it's good to talk to you again.
It's good to be with you. It's an honor being with you. And thank you for what you do for God and this nation.
Well, thank you so much. You know, so this trip by Donald Trump over to the Middle East, unless you listen to exclusively the left media, this was a very successful trip. He's certainly just, you know, by appearances, you know, here in the audience, he seemed to be very well received by the Saudis, that they really went all out. I mean, talk to us a little bit about what that meant from a cultural perspective. What did that warm reception say to other Muslims, especially Muslim countries?
Well, Saudi Arabia know what reality is and what gratitude is, because it took a man like Barack Hussein Obama to show them who is Trump and what the value of Trump. And when we look at all this, the reception that they had, President Trump in, this is, we have not seen this in the history of the American history or the history of the, you know, United Kingdom. I mean, Saudi Arabia. So therefore, when we see those emirs, which is all prince, these were war prince all together, gathering together, and they were dancing, receiving him as a protector of Saudi Arabia. So when they put the swords and they allowed him to stand right there and held his hand and they danced with him, this was accepting Trump into the rank of the royal family. And how do we know this is because under when Bush was the president of the United States of America and the president held his hand, I mean, the king of Saudi Arabia held his hand. He held his right hand with his left hand. And the sign in Islam when the king uses his left hand is we're using this man, and this man is only for our, you know, useful need. But when he held Trump, he held him with his right hand.
Wow.
He did not hold him with his left hand, you know, and so therefore that says, you know, this man is a savior. He's a savior for Islam and the Saudi Arabia. And there's a lot of marking on this because we saw how Obama turned against Saudi Arabia. He, used Saudi Arabia for the purpose of destroying the Iranian regime by lowering their, fuel all the way down in order to bankrupt Saudi Arabia to bankrupt Iran. And by doing so, what happened is that brought Saudi Arabia to the brink of, bankruptcy. And so Saudi Arabia, you know, spent a lot of money, and they've seen the Iranian come in through Yemen, through coming to north of, Saudi Arabia. They're coming through Kuwait, coming through Bahrain, through UAE, United Arab Emirates, and they're coming through Oman. They're trying to take over the whole oil region. And there is a war in every place over there, and that's Cold War, and all of it's taking place on a Sunni turf. So the Shia want to take over, hostile takeover. And by, Obama doing his Barack Hussein Obama doing his unholy alliances with Iran and giving them the nuke, give them the capacity and capability to do what they have to do to destroy the Middle East and bring it to subjugation, only for their hate to Iran, to Saudi Arabia and to Israel. Therefore, what happened? He gave them the green light to do whatever they want. When Trump entered Saudi Arabia and he did what he did, they received him as a savior. And not just that, but what Trump did, the $110 billion dollar military treaties, you know, that we gave to Saudi Arabia, this is will balance the military strategy in the Middle East and also in the petroleum region, which is the Gulf region, to the point that will set back Iran in a place that the Saudis have enough weapon now, including the THAAD, which is a rocket, will intercept ICBM, and these now Saudi Arabia will have and will intercept, Iranian rocket or nuclear rocket before it hit their land. So therefore, we're seeing all this, but the fact that Trump came to aid of the Saudis, that told the Saudis and all the Gulf region, that the Strait of Hormuz would not be controlled by the Saudis, because the war in Yemen is specifically and uniquely to control the Strait of Hormuz. And now what happened is when Trump stepped in, that changed every play, to the point that Rouhani, when he was elected as a president only by 52%, which is he barely won against Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. What happened is we know right now that he said he want to play with America and work with America. So they're changing their music, although they're still calling on the street Al-Maut to America, which is death to America every day.
Hmm. Well, this is why we love having you on, is picking up on those little subtleties. We certainly didn't hear any of that in the mainstream media. I'm going to take a break a little early here, though, because we've got a lot to talk to you about. Coming up, we're going to be talking about trust and distrust and how this trip may have affected that. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Kamal Saleem. He is president of Qum Ministries. He is a former cultural jihadist with the PLO and Muslim Brotherhood. And he had been sent to America to disrupt from within, but after an accident changed his life, he converted to Christianity and now works to bring Muslims to the freedom and liberty of Jesus Christ. And we're getting his insights on the recent foreign trip by President Trump and some really fascinating stuff there. And just in terms of the subtleties of holding hands and whatnot there within the Saudi within the Saudi trip. So great question here from my producer is, what do you think is going through Obama's mind right now?
Obama is very troubled. Obama is a paid man. He is the creation of a certain group, and I refer to him as the Manchurian candidate.
Yes.
He was prepared, he was trained, and he was put as a president of the United States of America for a purpose to shift all we see today, what's happening in the Middle East and Europe, including, you know, the refugees, including the Arab Spring. All of it was, you know, under his shift and Hillary Clinton. These two worked it together. But when we look at Obama himself, we need to know how come Obama, and, you know, when we see him going to speak into, Wall Street, and he's getting paid millions of dollars for speech of 20 minutes. Is Wall Street really paying him those millions of dollars for a little speech, a 20-minute speech? Or who is behind this? There are two groups behind this. The first one is the deep state. The deep state is very troubled with Trump because what he has done, the deep state analogy is to create one world without borders, to create one world with no stoppage, you know, like one nation, globalism, because they can control those nations, because they can milk those people with assets and with everything they have. They can tell people how to live their life. The second one is the globalist agenda, which is the communist socialist of Europe, the EU. And these, you know, we hear from Soros and several others that they are working through this group. And these people's agenda is also to control and to establish a one world order, you know, and one world civilization. And so therefore, this is why we've seen, when we see Obama, what he did, what he accomplished, he allowed the Arab Spring to take place, and it was not spring. And only we found out it's the Arab hell, you know, that's been loose and released upon the nations. And so, but then we see the invasion infiltration on, the Middle Eastern race upon the Western race. You know, there's a clash of civilization, and they tried to do this in the United States of America. And thank God for President Trump, who is our Cyrus for such time as this. King Cyrus came in a specific time in history to stand and protect Israel when Israel was destroyed and the Israelites were in Persia and, you know, under the Mede and the Persian. And so therefore he allowed them to come back, you know, to Jerusalem and rebuild the temple under Ezra and Nehemiah. Today, you know, Trump, what he did is he has taken back from these two big groups the power. And he has, you know, established, America all over again, a nation by the people, of the people, for the people. And he is doing what is good and pure and wholesome for the goodness of the American people, whether it's work, whether it's job, whether it's finances, whether it's economy, whether it's future, all of it. He has brought America back for one more time. So when we see all this, we see in today the deep state and the globalist coming together, and they're working under the radar of Obama. And what is Obama doing today is he is engaging this war and leading the media, giving the media their place, what to do, and they are spearheading the coup against America. Meaning the media is leading this assault on Trump to stop him from doing what he's supposed to do, to delay him in all in their tactics, and they are rallying the people. But we saw that the more they do, the more the fall of the media and the deep state, and now we're seeing some of them are on the verge of bankruptcy because, Trump put it out in the open.
Well, and I'm certainly very encouraged to see certain organizations start to lose some of their funding from George Soros, who is just the backbone of so much of that. In terms of the trip to Saudi Arabia, some of what I came away from looking at that is how do we move forward at this point? And a lot of that just comes down to trust. We've talked with you in the past about the principle of taqiyya and how this allows Islamists to be able to lie to your face if they believe that in doing so that actually furthers the goals of Islam. But then on the other side, the U.S. has also been breaching trust with the Arab world. As you said earlier, we gave Iran essentially the permission to go ahead and build a nuke, build missiles, and we handed them billions of dollars. So how do we move forward on all of this? How do we trust them? How do they trust us?
Well, here's the thing. They have seen the ability of United States of America is back, meaning we see United States is stepping to the forefront the way they left behind. And now that's only going to increase our economy. But we're asking these people, here's the deals that Trump is making. If you're on our side, then show us your, show us that you're going to war with us. So he is including them in this fight. So now we see Saudi Arabia and we see Israel have met. Whether we know it or whether American people know it or not, they have met. That has only put Iran in a fear. What fear? Because if the United States of America, with their satellites and their Moab and their all their weapon, no matter how deep and how much they fortified their fortresses underground to create those nukes, we can reach them today. And the fact that we are in Saudi Arabia, we are in a range to hit this clear and bright, so that is really changing everything. And to bring the United States back into Saudi Arabia, that tells me, for a first time, because we remember in the late, in 2000, early 2000, when Khobar Tower was hit in Saudi Arabia and was hit by the Hezbollah, by the Iranian, and also by, Al-Qaeda. They joined power and they hit that tower, and several hundred American soldiers were killed, and Saudi Arabia asked the United States to leave. But today, Saudi Arabia is asking America to move back again and just put their stronghold. Saudi Arabia would not do such a thing without allowing America to take a place of trust. Why would Saudi do this? Number one, even though we know al-taqiyya, which is lie by omission, although we know all their deception, as a Muslim, they can deceive, and it is in their holy teaching to deceive their enemy. But now their enemy become their protector. They are, like I said earlier, they're on the verge of bankruptcy, and they are on the verge of being taken out as a nation. And so therefore they will not be able to stand on their own anymore. They need somebody to help them. And now bringing the United States and bringing Israel, this is will empower Saudi Arabia to take stand against Iran, because what we know before, Saddam Hussein was the element to stand against, the Khomeinis, and he defeated them and he destroyed them, time after time. Now with the help of the American and the Middle Eastern army, can rise up and stand up against the Iranian, because the Iranian were moving into the entire Middle East from Saudi all the way to Beirut, Lebanon, and Israel.
Well, so this is certainly going to be fascinating as we move forward. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock here, so we'll continue this discussion with Kamal Saleem after this. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Kamal Saleem. He is a former culture jihadist. He's now president of Koom Ministries. That's K-O-O-M-E, ministries.com, if you want to go visit them. Great resources there to understand more about the Islamic mindset there. And so we've only got a very short time here with you. I guess this whole trip comes down to, what does this mean for the United States, and what does it especially mean in terms of terrorism? Do you think that we will see Saudi Arabia start pulling back from some of that?
Yes, and now we need to understand that Saudi Arabia supports Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is, but recently, since Saudi Arabia has joined power with the United States, we are seeing now that the rank of Al-Qaeda is joining ISIS, and we are seeing a lot of the leaders and headquarters of Al-Qaeda and ISIS is moving to Iran. So that is throwing everything into a different understanding. And that's why United States of America were hitting Al-Qaeda in Yemen. You go like, if Saudi Arabia is supporting, why are we hitting them? We need to understand everything shifted. So you need to see the play, you know, because the game is saying one thing, but the play says something else. So we have to watch the play itself. So when we look at all this, the United States is entering this and brought this, brought our generals, the majority of our generals now are involved. The Pentagon is involved. And we're watching this from military, intelligence. And we are trying to really rebalance the Middle East and Europe and America. That's why United States pulled out of the global agenda, just from the G summit, and they said, we're not going to sign out of this. And that's why Markel, is crying, poor me. This, look what America did to us.
It's we don't have America funding us anymore, is what it comes down to.
Funding and standing, behind them.
Yes.
Physically, which is military. And so, therefore, we're seeing things are accelerating to the point, we're going to see terrorism rising up in the Middle East like never before, and we're going to see some attack in the United States of America, but our intelligence is moving forward, and we're going to see Middle East and Europe lighting up like never before. It's going to just increase while America is going to come to stability.
Well, one of the things that you said during the break there that I thought was so interesting, because I did not hear it anywhere in the mainstream media, was that President Trump, when he met with Hamas, said that you guys aren't getting your funding. He only gave them part of that, and that didn't make any news that I ever saw.
Yes, because they don't want to give the news to everybody else. The media is the problem, is filtering everything and not putting the truth up front, and because they want to keep everything as normal. But we're going to see the changes, because we're not going to give Mahmoud Abbas, the AP of Palestine. Trump didn't give him all the money, because if he starts funding terrorism and those who are being suicide bombers being killed and being given, $70,000 from American money fund, then we're not going to give him the rest. And Mahmoud Abbas knows he cannot go further, until, he finishes this whole year. So therefore,
we only got about 30 seconds here with you. Does that mean he's going to get funding from somebody else then to fund terrorism?
Well, yes, we're going to see Soros is stepping up to the forefront, and we've seen several others. The state of Qatar is stepping up front, and Iran is stepping up front, all of them to mitigate the difference in finances. But in the meantime, our play is yes.
Wow.
We're standing in the same manner.
George Soros is just everywhere, unfortunately. And unfortunately, we're also up against the clock. Kamal, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to be with you.
Well, definitely a lot of complex issues today, so I certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser than when you got here. But if not, check out iSpyRadio.com for some more links to today's topics. Read them, share them, and remember that every time you share iSpy Radio, a liberal loses his wings.
And as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.